The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to our podcast, which is Waiting for Doom. It's a podcast for people who miss the Doom Patrol comic and like to talk about it till it comes back. I'm Paul Hicks, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks.
Yes, hello, and I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at avantgarve. You can also find both of us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can find us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page, and all of our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com. And we are also part of Inner Circle Comics, and you can check them out at innercirclecomics.com and find lots of other great shows there too.
Awesome. And we also have a show Twitter account, which is sentient and will abuse people, mostly us, actually. And that's called Wilfred, and that's at WFDpod.
Hi, Wilfred. Hope you're well.
Hey.
Hope this pleases yes. Wilfred.
We hope so.
Yes, so this week we are traveling back in time to the swinging 60s. We are going to be looking at two issues from Volume 1 from the Drake and Premiani era, issue 96 and 97. Which is when, like, the world went mad sort of thing. It's really awesome. I can't wait to get to it. But first, Paul, how was your week in comics and such?
San Diego Comic Con!
Oh, how was it, dude? Did you have a righteous time?
I didn't go.
Oh,
I didn't go.
Right.
I just stayed at home and read the news.
As did 90% of us.
Yeah. So, what news stood out to you, Mike?
I'm trying to think. I'm sure. Oh, the Batman Robin Eternal weekly series. I'm looking forward to that because I really enjoyed Batman Eternal that came out this year, late last year. Finished this year. Yeah, there was a whole heap of stuff, and now I'm trying to remember all of it. Drawing a blank.
Well, there's movie footage.
Well, trailers. Yeah, that too. Yes. Oh, no, yeah. Leaked footage. What a surprise.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, if you like some comics and they're really successful, there's more of that sort of stuff coming in a lot of cases.
Yes. What stood out for you?
I quite like the idea of a Green Lantern Corps movie. That sounds really cool.
Mm.
Yes. I was curious to see the Batman vs. Superman trailer and the Suicide Squad trailer, and now I have seen them.
And, dare I ask what you thought of said trailers?
They're both well done, but neither of them makes me think the movies are going to be well done.
Right.
I don't know, they're going to be spectacular. And
they will be movies that will be on screens.
Yeah, I want them to be really good, but, you know, this whole, you know, everyone's worshipping Superman and Batman has to fight him is just not a great angle to start with. But, yeah. I mean, maybe they'll be, you know, they'll start off really dark and heavy and they'll get lighter and lighter as the films go on. It'll be like the opposite of the Harry Potter series. I don't know.
So, like, we'll have a Justice League sequel that will be like Justice League Super Friends and it'll be really upbeat. Like,
yeah. Justice League No Fighting With Each Other. That'll be the subtitle.
Right. I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah, anyway, they'll be movies that I will see.
Right, I'm pretty certain I'll see them as well,
And some of these new series that DC are going to do sound okay, so, you know, I quite like Metamorpho, and I'm curious to see what Aaron Lopresti will do with that book as a writer/artist, whether it will be fun/enjoyable. Yeah.
I was, of course, disappointed that there was no Doom Patrol news at all.
Oh, I noticed that too.
You know, it's like, what the hell? You know?
Yeah.
If you would announce it anywhere, that would be the place.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there are millions of Doom Patrol fans there.
Yeah, but I think coming off the post-convergence, it's too early to announce Doom Patrol yet. They've got to just go through another round of, you know, some of these books are going to get canned and then they'll have the new ones waiting. So I'm still firmly convinced that we will hear about a Doom Patrol book this year.
Mm. Yeah, as fan of the show Jess Camacho said, she believes 2016 will be the year of Doom Patrol, which would be awesome. Yes. And she might actually have...
Every year after that. Yeah.
And if it does happen, well, she might end up getting a pony in the mail or something. So, hey, that sounded creepier out loud than it did in my head. Apologies to Jess. I mean, I'm just going to quit while I'm behind. Is that ticking, Paul?
That is ticking.
Wow, it must be the doom clock. Okay, so surprise, surprise, the numbers on the Doom Clock have not changed much at all. The last issue of a Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run, which was cover dated July 2011 and was on sale May 4 of that same year. So it's been 4 years and 10 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. How does that make you feel, Paul?
Makes me feel sad, Mike.
It does. Same here. The last appearance of the Patrol we had was 7 weeks ago, when they had their one-panel appearance in the JLU 8-page sneak peek, which is available on Comixology and DCComics.com. So
that makes me feel happy, Mike.
It does, because we know that Jeff Parker is including Robot Man in an upcoming issue of JLU. So that could be the way they get reintroduced properly into...
Yep, everyone loves Robot Man.
How could they not? He's a man who is a robot.
I wonder if he'll get smashed to pieces.
Well, drinks are plenty then, surely. And this week in Doom Patrol history, back in 1963, you could get issue 82 of My Greatest Adventure for the princely sum of 12 US cents. And this was the third appearance of the team in a story titled Three Against the Earth, which was written by Arnold Drake and art by Bruno Premiani, edited by Murray Boltonoff. And this story had three disguised aliens who had gained positions of power in the fields of politics, science, and finance. And they believed that Niles, the chief, was also an alien in disguise, but from another race. And they were all trying to outdo each other in claiming the Earth for themselves. So, of course, the team went and, you know, stopped them in their typical semi-violent manner.
And that was the end of the Earth. No.
And yeah, we actually covered this issue back in episode 5 of our show. So go and have a listen to that one if you want a few more details on that great issue. Paul, can you believe we've been doing... This is issue 20... This is episode 25 of our show. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's quite an anniversary, isn't it?
It is. It's our 25th anniversary.
I'm pretty excited.
Look, I'm excited about it, you know? I'm sure our listeners are too.
This could be a thing that we do.
Could be. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Okay, as we promised before, on Doomsplaining this week, which is now, we are going to talk about two issues of the Doom Patrol from Volume 1. We're talking about Issue 96 and Issue 97. Now, both of these were written by Arnold Drake, and they were penciled and inked by Bruno Premiani. And the cover artist was Bob Brown for both of them. Mm-hmm. The first one came out in June 1965. Mm-hmm. And the second one came out in August 1965. And they were both 12 cents. Mm. Yeah. So we'll start off talking about issue 96. And on the cover of this one, it has a giant green jukebox, which is strolling down the street, playing music so loud that it is vibrating Cliff into pieces. Take a drink, everybody. And it is entitled, the story inside is entitled, The Day the World Went Mad. Oh. Oh. Okay, so it opens with a mid-action scene that it will cut back to, and it's the Doom Patrol fighting in a crowd. The crowd has gone nuts and is running riot.
Kill, smash, burn, they're saying.
Yeah, that's going on. Yeah. Anyway, And then we see that morning in the home of Dr. Friedrich Kleinman, who's a world-renowned genius. Mm. There's no other information about him except that.
What an introduction, though.
Yes. But he's all happy. He's playing his piano, and then he goes off to work, and his housemaid gives him his coat, and he's promising to fix children's toys as the children hassle him in the street. And then he gets to work, and then he goes nuts and turns on his machine in a reckless and dangerous way, which isn't really apparent why.
No.
What it does. No. And this is at the same time at the United Nations, there's a man who's going to make a speech which will avert war in Asia. So it's a pretty good speech he's going to make. And he's going to receive a Nobel Peace Prize for it, apparently. Mm. And he gets up to make his speech, and they give him a symbol of peace, which is a little statue of a girl holding a flower.
Mm-hmm.
That is the symbol of peace, apparently.
Yes, back in the 60s.
Yeah. And he gets ready to make his speech, and as he's about to, he starts his speech, and then he's about to say a quote, and he opens a suitcase and pulls out a machine gun and starts shooting at the crowd.
Yeah.
And then a security guard punches him in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then we go across to a movie set where they're making a film which looks suspiciously like Bridge on the River Kwai. And it's a Japanese prisoner of war camp, and they're forcing a guy to build things, and he punches a Japanese guard, and they say cut, and he gets, you know, great work, Richard, you know, he's, and we're going to blow up the set in the next scene. And then he suddenly goes crazy and blows up the set before everyone's ready, and people are on the bridge and they get blown off. Mm. And so I presume that's probably a send up of William Holden, who was the star of Bridge of the River Kwai in 1957, which still would have been a well remembered movie hit.
Yes. Back in
65 when these came out.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, then we cut to the Doom Patrol headquarters, where they are looking at all these incidents around the world. And, you know, it could be a fantastic coincidence that all these people are going nuts at the same time in different places. But the chief doesn't think so. Mm. And his computer says that the chances are 25 trillion to one.
Well, that rules out chance.
Yeah. So all these men are in the same sanitarium. So Rita goes and sees them all, and they're all catatonic, and she's got fairly good access in the sanitarium because the doctor in charge of treating them shows Rita all their possessions, and they all have the same key ring, which is a blue monkey. Mm. Mm. And then we see the chief and the team discussing that, and they decide that the origin of this monkey is from a country called Tajali.
Yes.
Which is sort of an Asian made-upistan.
Yes, it's not a real place, gang. Don't bother looking. I already did.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're off to Jali the next day. And there's a sort of street parade with a big dragon, and it topples, and Cliff intervenes and saves a little boy who is about to be crushed. And then the Doom Patrol are all investigating different things. So Negative Man is on his way to the hotel, and he gets gassed in a car, and Rita is bailed up by a guy selling perfumes, and she's knocked out by the perfumes. And then Robot Man, who's hard to stop and knock out, he is basically blackmailed for the safety of the other two.
Mm-hmm.
To go with them. And then he goes to a secret group of billionaires, the three richest families of the East.
Yes.
Ku, Bung, and Ran.
Mm-hmm.
And they combine their name to make the word Cobra. So they're called the Cobra, which is a, you know, it's equivalent of like Trump and Murdoch. So it's like in the Asian world. Not as evil.
Yeah, when they announce themselves, they literally call themselves a syndicate. And Negman
says,
well, yes, it's the Cobra. And then he says, that's the biggest industrial financial cartel in the world. It's like, well, are they good or bad guys? It's a bit confusing. Anyway.
Yeah. But, I mean, this adventure starts very much with, you know, all these incidents and the Doom Patrol connect them all and get involved. So quite a few of the stories actually start that way.
Mm. Yes, but as you said, Reader's got far too easy access to the sanitarium and the staff, who just quite freely, it must be because, you know, she's of the Doom Patrol and everyone knows that they're the good guys. That's what I was guessing. So,
yeah.
Yes. The next chapter, titled The Three Families of Fear, and we get an outside shot of where the Cobra Syndicate are actually located, and it's a gigantic Asian-looking temple palace place on top of basically a glass spire that no one else can get through other than an elevator that's hidden away. And they're basically explaining to the patrol that they think they're being sabotaged by enemies of their corporation, which is why the blue monkey has turned up on the three men that went mad. So the team go to investigate, and they come across this temple, which, surprise, has a gigantic blue monkey perched on top of it. And it's telling anyone that can hear it, you know, go back, midnight approaches, because apparently the legend is, if anyone gazes at the eyes of these blue monkeys at midnight, they will go mad. Of course. So the team break in, they find the control room where someone is, you know, speaking to a loudspeaker, and he actually, rather than let himself get captured by the patrol, he appears to be sucking his thumb, but it's coated in cyanide, so he's actually just killing himself, so that's cool, you know.
Well, I have a theory about this, because as he's running off, Cliff pulls this block of stone out of the wall and lobs it at him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the size of a small safe. So having a rock the size of a small safe on your legs. So when he commits suicide with the cyanide, it's probably because of the pain from the rock crushing his legs, I reckon.
Possibly.
Motivate.
Wow, it's getting dark. Getting very dark. Anyway, meanwhile, on the other side of the world, but we'll say it's America, there are some engineers and technicians putting together a gigantic jukebox, which we saw on the cover. But it turns out that one of the technicians had been working on it on his own, and he's actually enabled it to become a gigantic walking robot jukebox thing that
of
is...
Of terror.
Yes, of terror. That's screeching some infernal music that will smash our eardrums, says one of the technicians. And I love the line, yes, our top electronics experts has gone completely insane.
Often happens.
Yeah. So we see, of course, the chief alerts the team through Robot Man's chest communication piece, and we cut back to this gigantic jukebox robot thing stomping around town, and the only sound effect he's making, and I'm going to do a really bad job of this, is like a ree-dee-doo, ree-dee-doo. So, of course, that'd get really annoying at top volume. Throughout an entire city. And I'm sure I'm going to cop hell about that sound effect online when I publish this. Anyway, of course, Negman flies to the rescue, and he's actually able to pick up the giant jukebox robot and throw it into a river in the middle of the city to stop it going on its rampage. But then, of course, some other military expert has gone nuts and created, I guess you'd call it a tank with a buzzsaw instead of like an actual working cannon.
It's a little bit Fury Road, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah. So who among the team would you throw up against a giant buzzsaw tank thing? Of course, it's Robot Man. And he goes up against the buzzsaw and he's saying, ha ha, it tickles, do it again. I love it. Because he's so tough. So there's basically more wackiness going on. But then we cut to the stock exchange, and basically anything that's related to the Cobra Syndicate is taking a thrashing on the stock exchange. There are people saying, sell 5,000 shares of Cobra Music Corp, because it, you know, the giant jukebox had the Cobra Music Corporation on its front, and 3F Armaments is the factory where the buzzsaw tank appeared from. So basically, their financial empire is crumbling. They're kind of believing the family now, and they go back to the chief, and he's done some investigating, and they realize that the companies that have profited from Cobra Syndicate's failing is known as GEMO Limited, which is actually, as the chief has somehow figured out, has a mysterious chairman whose name is Sempre Vita, which in Latin apparently means live forever. And they're pretty sure that it's the return of General Immortus. And he's somehow gone up against the Cobra Syndicate. But why? Why, Paul?
I thought it was Oasis. Anyway. In the next chapter, which is called Whom the Gods Would Destroy, a very dramatic title, we see in a small town in America, there's a blue monkey has been placed there late at night. And it at midnight strikes, it starts making the town go nuts. So everyone starts smashing things and they were going, break, kill, smash. And it's on. Meanwhile, in London, which is where the Doom Patrol are investigating GMO, they're threatening a secretary. And they hang him on from a Cliff hangs him from a rhinoceros head on the wall. Then they burst in expecting to find General Immortus.
Oh, no.
And they say, ha-ha, we found you. And he says, I expected you. It's here. I'm here to trap you. Do you notice the picture of General Immortus here is exactly the same as the one that was in that other comic we did? The Flash one?
No, I did not. I was too busy being creeped out by the weird smile he's got.
Yeah.
Raised eyebrows and he looks very happy to see them.
Yeah, well, we did it in the Flash episode where we... Yeah. Was that a Brave and the Bold 65? That's what it was.
It would have been, yes.
It looks like... Sal Trapani just drew it exactly the same. It's a very good drawing. Anyway, yes, General Immortus is gloating. He basically said, I'm actually sending the signals from space, from the moon, in fact. And he reveals that he is working in cahoots with Gargawax, who is based on the dark side of the moon.
Wait a minute, didn't they kill Gargawax?
Well, Gargarek says, aren't you surprised I'm still alive? So, yes.
Somehow all those plastic men must have saved him back in issue 91.
Yes, so Gargarek gloats about his mind ray cannon, which is focused on the blue stone, and it creates people who are crazy.
Mm.
And then he launches rockets to spread the madness. So I presume there's more of the blue mineral from the monkeys in those rockets.
Because that's what they were saying earlier. I believe that they couldn't find the substance that the monkey trinkets were made of anywhere on Earth. So
yeah.
It's bloody Gargawax.
Bloody Gargawax. Anyway, and they're just about to go off and solve the problem, but General Immortus explains to them that he can electrify the room. And so he throws some keys against the wall and they're electrified. And while he's telling them all about this, they don't pick him up and throw him into the electricity. They just listen.
Yeah, you got a good point there.
Anyway.
But then it would only be a one-part story and a short story.
Yeah, well, this is the part where he explains everything. Mm. So, and then he reveals that the head of the Cobra Syndicate, who comes into the room... is actually Madame Rouge, who loves to disguise herself as old men.
Yeah.
That's her thing, isn't it?
Look, everyone has a different taste and different hobbies, yeah. And that's one of hers.
That woman must be very kinky. Anyway. Anyway, so they depart, leave the Doom Patrol trapped in this room, and the electrified wall closes. And so, you know, it's a good villain trap where you trap the bad guy, the good guys, and leave them there, and then leave completely. So
because the good guys will never figure a way out, ever. So what happens next, Paul?
Well, Cliff picks up a desk and throws it at the floor, but discovers that the floor is electrified underneath the floor.
Right.
So, but chucking the desk through the floor has actually shorted it all out. So so he's accidentally hit a main cable. So then Cliff smashes through the wall. They fly from London to France. Paris? Yes,
Paris.
The Eiffel Tower is there.
Yes.
So, we're back in that famous fictional locale.
Yep.
Yep. And we see the rockets are sort of landing all over the place. So there's one in France. And Rita has gone to somewhere that looks like a bit like Istanbul, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Yep. And they're... destroying the rockets so that they can't activate the madness.
Yep.
Madness. They call it madness. And then we see the scene from the start of the issue with the riot in London. And, yeah, the Empire State Building's on fire. Looks like... Yeah, Rita ends up in the Hudson as, you know, debris falling from all the buildings.
Well, that's one way to avoid the traffic. Just hop in the river and swim down.
Yeah. And they find the rocket in Central Park, and they smash it, which ends the madness in New York. And then they zoom across the world back to Tajili, and they... Negative Man breaks in, and they find that the real head of the Cobra Syndicate is tied up underneath the town on top of the spire.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he was hidden in their own headquarters all along.
Yeah. So the Doom Patrol have had a victory, but then the giant computer, the giant monitor in their headquarters crackles to life and shows... that Gargarax and General Immortus are safe on the moon, and they're gloating, and with them is a brain in a dome.
And you can see like...
that the brain has teamed up. It is a super team up of evil.
Yeah. Inconceivable.
Yeah, and the brain gloats that they are free to attack from the moon, and they will soon. Until then, sweet dreams, which is kind of thoughtful. Patrol vow that they will be ready.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this issue, Mike?
I loved it. I loved the fact that the bad guys were teaming up together. You know, when you first got General Immortus and then Gargoax and then Madame Rouge and then the Brain at the end, and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah. And it's got globe-trotting in spades there. You know, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
So they go in London and sort of fake Asia.
Fake Paris.
Fake Paris. Yeah. And that that giant robot jukebox thing is awesome.
Yes. Yes. It's just, yeah. I love the team up with the villains, and I love that they're, well, yeah, they've got an interesting plan, I'm guessing, to make people mad so that, you know, no one will stop them. And that, but obviously the patrol are going to stop them. So, it's, yeah.
Yeah. It's a strong, you know, the art is so strong and everyone is so expressive and, you know, the designs of everything are so cool. Yeah, it's great. I think this is one of the most fun issues of the early run that we've done.
Yeah, and it's a good little two-parter as well. So let's get to part two.
Okay. All right, Mike, what's this one about?
Well, this one is titled... War of the Mind Slaves, which doesn't make a lot of sense yet, but it will. And it's awesome because we've got a giant Elastigirl, but her body is kind of crystallized.
Uh-huh.
And there's basically armed forces, you know, aiming their guns and a rocket launcher at her. And you see Cliff there sort of holding his hands up saying, no, no. But, you know, it's telling us, you know, that the greatest mob of menaces ever have teamed up. The Brotherhood of Evil, General Immortus and Gargoax. It's like, oh, it's kick-ass. Anyway, it all kicks off where we see the team chasing down yet more rockets, and they're all basically using their powers and their abilities to do whatever they can to stop these rockets from hitting their targets. But it turns out that it's just a test that the chief has put together to prepare them for whatever the super villain team up might next throw at them.
Yeah, so. It's like the X-Men have the Danger Room. The Doom Patrol just go out into fields and smash telegraph poles and rockets and things.
That's right, X-Men. Yeah, in your face. Damn copycats. Oh, don't get me started. We then cut to the dark side of the moon, where our favourite villains are all sitting around a big table and discussing their plans. And basically, it's not going well. Gargarax is saying, you know, they're ready for Operation MS to be activated, which is going to be Operation Mind Slaves. And then we turn out
I thought it was like a fundraising for, you know, medical research.
No.
Oh. That's probably not as admirable then.
No, it's not, funnily enough. We see that the villains can't quite agree on what their goal should be. It turns out that the Brain and what he wants for himself and Madame Rouge and Muller is a simple goal of $1 billion. So,
$1 billion?
Yes, which I think in today's money is about $7.5 billion, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. Gargoyax ridicules the Brotherhood and says, you know, it's a childish motive, just wanting nothing but cash, you know, you should have grander schemes. And then, of course, they start fighting. And then General Immortus says that they're all acting like children because, literally, compared to his age, they really are children. And they should all just calm down. Finally, they decide to, you know, let Gargoyax show them what Operation MS will do. And he's got three captives in a pit. And one of them is, he says that he is a witch doctor of his people. He's an African-looking gentleman. There's another guy in a flannelette shirt. And there's a guy saying, "May the spirits of my ancestors destroy your evil." And no idea where he's actually from. In any case, the test goes ahead.
Dodge stereotypes.
Yeah, but some of them, I mean, yes, you can tell where the witch doctor's from, but flannelette man, no idea. And, you know, the man who worships his ancestors, not really sure. But we find out more as we go along. What the test actually does is it crystallizes the skin of these gents, and it makes them basically mind slaves to Gargoyax, because they're then, you know, hailing him and saying, you know, "We live or die for Gargoyax," and then they go and off.
It embiggens them.
It does embiggen them a bit too, yes. So yeah, basically, what Operation MS does is it turns people into crystal versions of themselves, crystallized skin, and they are basically pawns for Gargoyax to do with as he wishes. And he's basically holding a model of the Earth with his big, weird hand, saying, "Only a handful in each corner of the Earth will be needed. Armed with terrifying weapons, they will deliver their own world to us." Oh, damn you, Gargoyax. Anyway, what happens in the next chapter, Paul?
I just take a second to note Gargoyax's well-manicured fingers.
Yeah, maybe that's the weird bit that's freaking me out.
Yeah. I wonder if he's naturally bald or if he shaves.
Anyway. I'm going to say naturally bald.
Okay.
This has gotten a bit weird, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Okay, in part two, which is called Three Trails to Terror, we have a beautiful split panel page with three sections, and we can see... I don't know if that's... There's some sort of Yukon or maybe Canada. I don't know. Somewhere. But there's a logging camp, and there is a man who... looks like a gorilla with a little man's face stretched over the front of his face.
Not creepy or weird at all.
Wearing a beanie and a check shirt, moving trees around. And there's an African village, and we can see that someone is speaking in a German accent and unloading medical supplies and looking to be very helpful and kind. Looks suspiciously like General Immortus. Then we see that there's a travelling historian woman who is bringing all her luggage and machines into an ancient temple-type town. She looks a bit like Madame Rouge.
I wonder what's going on.
Yeah. And, yeah, we have a quick cut around the world where all these people have suddenly... these locations have become crystal people-centred. So these people get embiggened, turned into crystal, and start marching through walls and chucking trucks around and making bridges by joining themselves together so the rest of them can walk across. So they're on some sort of global army march in these three locations.
And it's looking like there's not a lot that can stop them, really.
No, guns don't work. They can walk straight through what looks like the
Great Wall
of China. The Great China Wall, as it's also known in Mike's world.
Shut up.
The Doom Patrol are monitoring the situation, and they get to their plane, the African Zephyr. Why is it called the African Zephyr?
I don't know
either.
Maybe because that's all they could think of. And maybe they don't word good like me and the Great China Wall.
Yes. Anyway, so there are three locations of trouble, so the Doom Patrol have to split up. So Negative Man is going to Africa on the plane. It looks like Rita is going to Sweden, which must be where the Czech shirt man comes from, duh. And Cliff said he's going to get a plate of chop suey right at the source.
So God.
He's obviously off to Mexico or something. Anyway. Around the world, there is trouble, and yes, the crystal people are marching, and the tanks can't stop them, and machine guns can't stop them, and they join hands, and suddenly they crystallize other people. So the army is growing. And Cliff arrives in the Asian province of some description.
Guessing somewhere in China.
Somewhere, could be. And he gets into a fight with a crystal guy who he knocks out, and then Cliff starts fighting the hordes, and he's on the Great Wall of China as they're climbing up, and then he starts doing a bit of Cirque du Soleil with ladders and knocking them around.
I love the insults that he hurls at the crowd of crystallized people to get their attention. Look up here, you crystal creeps. Your father's mustache. Your mother eats yogurt. It's like, what?
My mother does eat yogurt.
Yeah. Oh, the 60s. Anyway.
And at one point he's on two ladders and he walks across the crowd using the ladders like stilts, which is, yeah, that's one way to do it. And then continuing his circus performance, he actually rides two motorcycles at once because he says one motorcycle won't handle his weight. So he stands on two and drives them with rope.
You got to admit, these are some of the best action scenes that Cliff has ever had. Ever.
Yeah. And he doesn't get busted up.
No, no.
And then he finds all the circuitry inside the town bell, and he smashes it.
Yep.
And that returns everyone to normal.
Hooray!
Yay. It would be awkward if they all just dropped dead.
Yes, yes it would.
Then we see, meanwhile, in the Swedish lumber camp, so it was the Swedish lumber camp we were looking at.
Right.
The gorilla with the human face mask on pulls the mask off, revealing himself to be Monsieur Mala.
Kel surprise.
Yeah. And yes, they've got all these crystal people marching through the forest. And then Rita shows up and starts pulling trees up and makes a cage of trees around them. But they join hands and blast her with their crystal powers and turn her into crystal.
Oh.
That's how Rita. We get
crystallized Rita on the front cover. Oh, God.
Yeah. Yes. And then on to part three, Mike.
Part three, Prisoners of the Moon, where we see Larry running around an African village and there's all sorts of hell and mayhem breaking loose. And somehow he figures out that the transmitter for the crystallization ray is in the head of a statue in the village. I don't know how he figures it out, but he smashes it anyway. And then it cuts to a nearby city where we see these crystallized African villagers suddenly turn back to normal as they're carrying a gigantic bank safe. So, one minute they're saying, show them our power, the power of the crystal conquerors, squee! And they kind of fall down and collapse and aren't too happy. Anyway, we then cut back to Sweden, where we see Crystal Elastigirl leading the crystallized men there on the rampage, and she's got Mala on her shoulder, because she's gigantic, and you know there's a fighter jet coming towards her, and she just punches it out of the sky. So she's on the rampage with them. Meanwhile, back at Doom Patrol headquarters, have a guess who turns up.
The situation has gotten so bad. The chief has called in Mento.
And once again, Mento says, you know, he mentions his financial status because he says, what is it you want from me? Money, I suppose. That's what most people ask of the fifth richest man in the world. We get it, Steve. We get it. Anyway, yes, so the things are so dire, Cliff has said, Mento, come and help us. So we
And he's happy to help because it involves rescuing Rita.
Oh, yeah, he'll do anything for Rita. Of course he will, yeah. But oh, God. We cut back to Sweden and we see that the crystallized men have captured Cliff and he's mouthing off at Mala, who says, look who I've got in this tiny glass ball. I commanded Rita to shrink, then we turned her back to normal. So if you try anything, I will crush this glass ball and kill Rita. Oh, and look, we've also got Negative Men. Oh, and look, we have Mento as well. What a lot of bloody help Mento was.
Wasn't he good?
It's like one page later and he's already knocked out.
Probably need to take a drink every time Rita gets captured and shrunk, because that does happen a few times.
Okay, we'll add that to the drinking game.
Yeah, okay.
they're kind of a thing in motion, these Doom Patrol drinking rules. Anyway, the team are all captured and knocked out, apart from Robot Man, who basically gets told, you know, what the villains are going to do. And that is, they're going to turn the rest of the team into the Crystal Freaks as well. But Robot Man is not going to have any of that. And he starts the attack. He starts knocking out the Crystal guys there. He starts waking up the team. He can't wake up Mento, of course, because Mento's bloody useless. But he gets Mento's Mento helmet, I guess we'll call it. And he puts it on Larry, who's just waking up. And he says, you know, we need your brain waves to try and stop Gargoax and the Crystal Dudes. But it turns out that the helmet doesn't work for Negative Man. And they're not sure if it's just because Negative Man doesn't have sufficient brain waves or whether it's specifically tuned to Mento. Bloody Mento. Anyway, it then turns out that Mento suddenly springs back to life and he's like, give me back my helmet. And he starts using it to throw Gargoax and the Crystal guys around, making them land on their heads and knocking them out. Of course, Madame Rouge turns up, and she's very interested in Mento's helmet. She stretches her arms through the room and takes it off Steve's head. Meanwhile, the rest of the Brotherhood turn up. Mala's got a special grenade, which has got sand within it, and when it explodes, it starts clogging up Robot Man's joints. General Immortus starts spraying Negative Man with liquid lead, which means that the negative spirit can't come out. Wouldn't liquid lead kind of really, really hurt, though, as well? I'm surprised that Larry could survive that attack.
Maybe it's not hot lead. It could be liquid by some other means.
Right.
Like comic book science or something.
Thank you very much. Beat me to it.
This comic is unrealistic.
Oh, what? Rita comes to and she's embiggened herself and she's grabbed Gargoax as well. So there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. Suddenly, Larry realizes he can rip part of his shirt still open to let the negative being out. The negative man knocks out all the crystal guards and the team look like they've won until Gargoax says, no, actually, we are going to get away because we've planted a bomb big enough to destroy all of the Earth. Actually, on the Earth, and you can have its exact location if you agree to free us. Otherwise, that's the end of the world. It then cuts to the team back in their headquarters, and they're saying, he wasn't bluffing, we actually found the detonator that we've removed from the bomb. So, there's like a big leap there. We don't even actually see the bad guys get away, but they do. And then... even more depressing news.
No, this is good. This works out well.
Mento asks if he can join the Doom Patrol. Because he's got his special powers and, you know, he's a bit different. So they decide they're going to use the black ball system, where each member of the team is given one black ball and one white ball, and essentially everyone has to secretly put in the same colour to agree. So it turns out, three white balls are put in, and there's one black ball. So, sorry, Mento, you're not allowed in the team. Which is, yeah, good. Mento storms off saying, you know, it was Robot Man or Mummy Face who was against me. One of them's afraid to have me around because they know I'd win Rita away in no time. But this won't stop me. Watch and see. And as he storms off, the team are talking amongst themselves, and it turns out it was Rita that put the black ball in there. And Chief says, bravo, Rita. Bravo. And...
yeah.
That's the end of the issue. And I've got to say, for a two-parter, it started better than it finished, I think.
Yeah, it does.
I think the setup in the first issue was great, but then it kind of didn't do much in this second issue. It was like, yes, no. We've got these crystallized people that will do everything we command them to, and yeah.
I know we don't like Mento, but I was pleased to see him show up because it makes the Doom Patrol's world just a little bit bigger, that there's someone else who can get involved.
This is true, I suppose.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, the way they change from country to country in this comic, and in fact, the end confrontation takes place on the moon after they get flown there. Mm. So, I mean, the way they change locations is just between panels. It's, you know, it's so the opposite of the way things happen these days.
Yeah. It's just very sudden and very quick, and you're like, oh, okay, we're here now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, and throughout these two parts, the team are flying all over the world by various means. So sometimes Negative Man is going from, you know, Asia to America, and then he's zipping back and grabbing Rita and Cliff and zipping back again and things like that. It's just happening constantly. So, you know, there is an energy to this stuff that, you know, it's quite remarkable.
Yeah, it's a good two-parter, but yeah, the ending was a little bit... I was a bit unsatisfied with the way it all wrapped up.
Yeah.
I was satisfied to see the back of Mento, though, but anyway. Wait, that sounded creepy too. Sorry. Oh, goodness me. Anyway, yeah, it was a good fun two. It was also nice to see a two-parter again, because as the Doom Patrol in the 60s goes along, a lot of them tend to become like Monster of the Week sort of thing, where they have a different new menace sort of appear once, and then we don't see them ever again sort of thing. So I did appreciate that they, you know, continued the story across the
years. Yeah, but it's also a two-parter that you could read either part with, you know, fairly satisfying endings and beginnings. So,
yeah,
you know, they do stand alone, but they are connected.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a bit like us.
Wait, what are you saying?
Okay, that's it for Doomsplaining, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Time for the Mailbag of Doom. And this week, the mailbag was asking, what comic book grievance do you still feel? And, we got some intense answers from people. So most people gave us multiple answers.
There were some... People have been stung. People have been hurt by comics.
Yeah. And we didn't, I mean, I don't think we heard from anybody who hasn't been reading, who's only read comics for about a year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There isn't time for the grievances to come. No. But anyway, the first person we heard from was Bobgar Ornelas, who's at Slowmo. And he said, I'll get back to you. Although I do miss Zombie, which is spelt with an X. And that was sort of a milestone book, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, which feels like a cheat since it's similar to DP. So there were two series of Zombie and he misses them both. So I always wanted to read Zombie and never did.
I recall the second one because that was more recent.
Do you recall reading it or just recalling
it? I think I read the first issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah.
It was a trade. I was always like, I'd like to get that trade. And then DC sort of... New 52'd everything, and I was like, oh, there's other trades I ought to look at.
DC taking forever to do a trade release? Ay, caramba.
Yeah.
We also heard from Too Dangerous at Dangerous 2, who said his grievance was making Max Lord a murderer, so wrecking three characters, Max, Blue Beetle, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, Max was a long-time Justice League associate, and sort of... a dodgy good guy, and then he became full-on bad guy, and he murdered Blue Beetle, and Wonder Woman had to murder him.
Yep.
So that did mess things up quite a bit, and that was around the time of Infinite Crisis, leading into that.
Yeah.
I've got mixed feelings about that. Like, I don't really like the choices they made, but I like the outcomes of the choices. Like, it really did inject a lot of excitement in the DC Universe at that time. And, you know, you may not liked where it was going, but it all felt like it was going somewhere.
Right.
If you know what, do you concur.
I would agree with that. I was not so much into DC at the time, but having read some of that stuff after the fact, I agree. It was a good read, if slightly, conflicting. Yeah.
But,
It's easier to pretend there's two Max Lords and,
okay.
There was two DC universes at this time,
And now there's lots of them. Anyway.
Yes. We heard from Moby One, who's at Shmoby One, and he said the demise of DC Archives hardcovers. So he was collecting quite a few of those, and then they stopped making them without any warning. His other grievance is his old a local comic shop charging customers to buy previews. Yeah, that's not cool. And the other thing is mystifying collection contents, by which Moby means, books which don't include issues they ought to include, or they don't do recap pages when they jump across events and things like that. So, when trades just don't make sense, or they don't collect everything, or they collect a part of something, or you've got to buy three trades to get a whole story and all that annoyance. Mm. Yeah. We hate that.
Okay, we also heard from Dean Buckley at Sublime Insomnia. He said his grievance was literally every cancellation of a Martian Manhunter solo title ever, including the awful ones. So I'm guessing Dean's a big Manhunter fan. So,
I do like the Ostrander run, Ostrander Mandrake run of Martian Manhunter. I quite enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. But I know there are hardcore Martian Manhunter fans who hate it.
Right.
I had the misfortune of bumping into them online a few times.
Oh, dear.
All right, we heard from Capitan Frack, who's Fractures, who's a good friend of the show. And he said the lack of a solo Mento comic.
Oh, come on.
And then he kept going. He kept sending more. And he said the inability to get a Master of Kung Fu or a ROM omnibus, a Romnibus, if you will.
Oh, God. How long have you been working on that one for?
It just came to me just then.
Right. Well done.
The whole death of Wolverine, not a fan. The cancellation of Hellblazer, the lack of an Ostrander's Suicide Squad oversized hardcover.
Right.
Which I would like. Yeah, I love that book. Anyway, so, and I should mention that I have mentioned this podcast a couple of times, the unofficial 75 Greatest Marvels Countdown podcast. And Frack was actually a guest on that and did the episode on the Wolverine Frank Miller mini, if you know that one.
Right.
Yeah, and Frack is a beautifully articulate man, unlike us.
Hey.
Hey.
Son of a... Well, if Frack's nice to us, we'll link to that episode on our stuff so that we can all be one big... why not? You said he was a friend of the show.
We can do that?
Yeah. Surely. We've got the technology.
Okay,
we?
Good.
We also heard from Arbad, who is at ArbadF09 on Twitter, and he said mid-story cancellations, such as The Shadow, due to the wrath of the intellectual property owner, Big Numbers, apparently the creators had a nervous breakdown, and Pazienza's Storia di Astarte, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, about Hannibal's warrior dog. And then he's got written here, Creator's OD. What if he means the creators overdosed?
Well, that would slow down a comic, I'm sure. That Shadow run, it's great. It starts off as like the regular Shadow, with fighting crime in the dark and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets decapitated and ends up on a robot body. And it's crazy and it's awesome. And I was reading it at the time and I think it got to issue 19 and issue 20 just never came out.
Wow. Holy geez.
Because they pulled the plug on it. But it was, it's a good comic. And I think people have really discovered it later after the fact and gone, this was awesome stuff. Yeah.
Cool.
So, I'm a big fan of that one.
Mm-hmm.
We heard from Rift. Rifty. Yeah, I'm sitting in Rift's living room right now recording. And he gets rude. He said, it has to be that bullshit version of the Phoenix in the X-Men movies. At the end of X2, you can clearly see a fiery shape under the water. Then X3 comes along and all we get is some emo Jean Grey with personality issues. Rubbish. And then on Twitter later, he added the Fantastic Four cloud version of Galactus from that movie.
Oh, God.
Instead
yeah.
of giant Galactus.
We also got a late entry in from @Ostrakos1, Avert Me Chew Talkin on Twitter. He said his original grievance was that there was no Agents of Atlas, but Marvel just changed that. So he was going to say no Fantastic Four right now. That's his grievance. So.
Oh, just made it. Just made it. Oh. Just made it, Kevin.
We also heard from Dr. Ange. He is the man who actually sent in two emails with two grievances because he feels so strongly about them. So the first one is from Dr. Ange. Get ready, kids. He said, "You might think that I'm going to say that my biggest comic grievance in comics is the death of Supergirl in Crisis, but I've come to realize that the Crisis death has given her character some sense of legacy and selflessness, a sort of Ragnarok where we know that when she does die, it is saving the world. Instead, I'm going to list an event that impacted my comic collecting for nearly 15 years. Wow. You see, I'm a huge Legion of Superheroes fan. I consider the LSH his first comic. As a kid, they were the book I looked for on the spinner rack when I had loose change in my pockets. I'm in high school and college, and they were one of the titles always on the pull list. When in early adulthood, the Legion were redone as the 5 years later setting. It wasn't universally well received, but Ange loved it, so much so that he's been reviewing that run on the Legion of Superbloggers site.
That's a great run. That is the best Legion run, I would say.
Okay, cool. I've got to admit, I recall in my youth maybe reading one or two random issues of the Legion, but never anything kind of consecutively or seriously. So, Ange continues, and Ange says, "And then it happened. In the zero-hour event, for some asinine reason, we learned that the Time Trapper, one of the vilest Legion villains, was in fact Cosmic Boy, the soul of the Legion. Because of the timey-wimey powers of the Trapper, we are told that all the prior appearances of the Trapper were, in fact, Cosmic Boy. Terrible, awful, inane, ludicrous." Oh, such language, Doc.
So he doesn't like it?
Doesn't like it, no. In fact, that reboot irked him so much that he dropped the Legion from his pull list for the first time since he had a pull list. And says, "I didn't return until the Wade 3 boot. The Legion Lost Years, the later, 5 year later Legion issues, the Legionnaires book, the Legion Lost Years. I didn't read any of it. Cosmic Boy being the Time Trapper drove me away from one of my favorite comic properties for 16 years." And then he says, "Great show as always." Thanks, Doc.
Thanks. And then his second grievance, grievance number two, too big for Twitter. "I was never a huge fan of J. Michael Straczynski, but I sampled plenty of his work and found some of it excellent. In particular, I really liked his Supreme Power Marvel series with Gary Frank. I was a bit peeved when that series withered on the vine. Then DC handed him the keys to the kingdom. He was given Superman and did the absolutely odious Grounded. Just excrement with a horrible Superman who acted like a douche. He was given Wonder Woman and wrote a bizarre story with her outside the continuity. And he wrote the terrible Superman Earth One, another truly terrible Superman. And then he left a Superman and Wonder Woman in the middle of those blighted storylines requiring others to come in and try and make something readable out of the mess he left." Mm-hmm. "And thus the grievance. It is one thing to write lousy stories, it is another to bail when the tea leaves say that they are lousy. That is just being a pitiful human. Right then I decided I would never read another of his books, and I haven't. I had heard how his Superman in subsequent Earth 1 volumes are even worse, giving guns to rebels and looking the other way. I'm glad to have stayed away and will continue to stay away. JMS will never get another of my dollars." So, looking forward to the Flash Earth 1, Ange, that's just been announced by JMS.
I bet you he's not. And I have to admit, Ange, you kind of stole my answer for this week, because I too am not a fan of JMS and I have grievances with the man. Way back when, I was a huge fan of his Rising Stars series, and that kind of faded away into nothing. Apparently, it got finished, but there were so many delays and continued delays with that damn thing that I just lost interest and walked away. And then years later, I was a big fan of the most recent Brave and the Bold run that DC put out. And guess who ended up being the writer on that? That's right, JMS. And he, admittedly, he did do some good stuff on there, but then it just stopped. It just stopped. There was no announcement. There was no nothing. It just vanished. And I was a bit annoyed. And the next thing you know, he's working on some Superman Earth 1 book that I didn't care for. I wanted my Brave and the Bold, damn you, JMS. Anyway, so I concur with Dr. Ange's grievance regarding Mr. Straczynski. And yeah, he's like the mentor of comic book writing.
Well, that Rising Stars was such a hot book, and it was so, you know, it was on such a wave of popularity, and he killed it.
Yes,
he absolutely killed the book's momentum and everyone's interest in it, and you know, like everyone was just so over it by the time it finished.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't even bother chasing up the final issues. I just walked away from it, and again. Yeah, when Brave and the Bold just vanished, I was like, never again will I go near any of his books. Because, for the other reasons Ange explained, he either does a horrible job or he hands it off to someone else and goes off to the whatever the next fancy bloody project is. I'm rambling now. What's your answer, Paul?
My answer is, well, in 1990, DC did a series of annuals called Armageddon 2001. Mm-hmm. And they introduced a character called Wave Rider, who jumps around through time. And the shtick of the series was Wave Rider was going to visit various characters in the DC universe and look at their future and try and work out which one of them becomes the villain in the future known as Monarch.
Right.
And this series was pitched as, hey, everyone at home, you can play along and we'll give you all the clues and you can, you know, work it out. And DC did these annuals for a few months and the readers did work out who Monarch was going to be. And we all kind of decided it would be Captain Atom, and that made the most sense, and this was the way the story was going.
Uh-huh.
And someone at DC panicked because everyone had worked out the answer and decided at the last second to change the answer to be Hawk from Hawk and Dove, even though this broke all the rules that they'd been playing by, because we'd already seen Hawk and Dove's origin, you know, future, and that was cool, and they were, you know, it was very interesting. So in the interest of giving us a shock ending, they buggered the entire story.
Wow.
And that made me very angry, and it was really unsatisfying, and, you know, yeah, we were surprised, but it made the story suck.
Wow.
So, you know, this is a tip for people. If you're writing a story, don't make the story suck just to get a surprise in.
Mm.
Every single horror movie, I'm looking at you.
Or maybe if they had, maybe if they'd stuck to their guns and gone, well done, fans and you know, attentive readers, you figured it out. Here is how it plays out. And just stuck with it, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, it made a mess of things for years. Like, Jeff Johns was trying to fix this in JSA for the next 5 years after that.
Wow.
Actually, longer. Yeah. And I have another one.
Go for it.
You know, inspired by our listeners, I'm going to do another one.
Mm-hmm.
Little comic called Marvel vs. DC, or DC vs. Marvel, depending on which edition you got.
Right, yes.
And it basically pitted characters against each other. And there were some fights that were decided by the writers of the series, and there were some that were decided by the readers who voted.
Right.
Which is why we ended up with a situation where Storm defeated Wonder Woman.
What? Yeah. I will admit, I was aware of the books at the time and how Amalgam came out of all of them, and yeah, I wasn't aware that had gone down, because that's fucking bullshit.
Yeah, everyone decided it was a popularity contest and X-Men beat Wonder Woman. But story-wise, it made zero sense. You know, I can see Wolverine beating Lobo on a good day, which was the other, you know, one that I had agreements with.
Right.
But Storm beating Wonder Woman is a no way, ever.
No.
That's absolute crap.
Good God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I rate that grievance. I seriously... I rate it. Through the roof.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, I think that might be all we have time for this week.
Yes, so you can reach us, as always, on Twitter, at WFDpod. You can always email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, and you can reach us through the Waiting for Doom Facebook page as well. And just to give you a teaser for next week, we will be jumping forward in time back to Volume 2, but we're going to go to the very beginning of it. So we're going to look at issues 1 to 3 of Volume 2, which is before Morrison, but after Drake and Premiani. It's Kupperberg and Lytle stuff. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And what's our question for next week, Paul?
Our question of the week will be, what is a run that you have dabbled in but you would like to finish? So what is your comic book blind spot that you are curious about?
Excellent. Yes. I'll say something from Straczynski.
Something you'd actually want to read but you haven't. So.
Right. Okay.
So you might say Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, that'll do. I'll have it.
Anyway, that's next week. You don't answer now, Mike.
Okay, right.
Have I taught you nothing?
That's our show, guys. Thanks for listening. We will catch you again next week. See ya.
Thanks, everyone.